Welcome to Fresno's Best Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Maddox. Today, I'm joined by Linda Furness, president of the Fresno County University California Master Gardener Advisory Board and a member of the Board of Master Gardener Association of Fresno County. If you ever had a question about your garden, why tomatoes won't grow, why a bug is eating your roses, or how to design a yard that actually works in Fresno's climate, there's a good chance someone in the Master Gardener program has an answer. Linda helps lead that effort locally, working with volunteers and the University of California Cooperative Extension to bring science-based gardening education to the Fresno community. In this conversation, we talk about what it takes to become a Master Gardener, the principles behind sustainable gardening in the Central Valley, and how programs like demonstration gardens and community workshops help people build healthier landscapes. If you care about gardening, sustainability, or just making Fresno a greener and more beautiful place, I know you'll enjoy this conversation with Linda Furness. Infinite quests, investigating, making convos to elevate guests. Politics, religion, culture, art, music, show some respect to the best little city left in the U.S. Fresno's best. Fresno's best. Linda, where do you like to eat in Fresno?
One of my favorite kind of spur at the moment go-tos is the Barrock Shop.
Oh.
Bullard and West in the shopping center with Save Mart.
Oh, okay.
They've got really good sandwiches.
Okay. What's your go-to order?
Cheeseburger with fries.
Nice.
Yeah. They make their own buns.
Ooh. I'm always looking for a good burger place.
You never been there? You got to check it out.
I have been there. Yeah.
Yeah. Get the cheeseburger.
Gotcha.
And it's kind of an old-fashioned kind of homemade cheeseburger. And it's once you pick it up, you really can't set it down.
That sounds amazing. What about a dinner spot for you? What's a dinner spot around town?
Dinner. Limelight is nice.
Okay. Yeah.
And the Annex. I like the little, I don't know what they call them, but they do them seasonally. It's a little pocket of pasta that has...
The annulati, the corn annulati?
Yeah, and in the spring they do corn, and in the fall they do butternut squash.
Yes, those are both incredible.
With the like roasted sage on top of it. And a crumbled amaretto cookie on top. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's a complete meal right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Let's jump into some gardening stuff. I want to start with kind of a general question. What's the difference between a master gardener and someone that just loves to garden in their yard?
Master gardeners also love to garden in their yard. But the difference is that a master gardener has been certified by the University of California Division of Agricultural and Natural Resources as being knowledgeable of science-based, eco-friendly gardening strategies.
I see.
And they have gone through an application process and been interviewed for the program and then gone through a course of study that is developed in conjunction with the University of California.
Okay. Yeah. So like land grant universities are the typical administrators of...
Yes, we are connected. UC is a land grant university and we are part of the cooperative extension program. Yeah. And since you mentioned that, I wanted to share that we have a new class for master gardeners that will be starting in January of 27.
Okay.
And the applications will be available very shortly. And if folks go to our website, there's a list of workshops that we're going to be doing out in the community.
Yeah.
To let folks know about the upcoming new class and how they can apply for it.
Fantastic. Let's dig into a little bit more of the principles of master gardening. So, in my reading, I saw the intersection of four things: public education, environmental stewardship, applied science, and then volunteerism. So, at least my understanding is those are kind of the four cardinal points of master gardening. Where do you spend your time in the kind of nexus of the different activities of master gardener? Are you spending a lot of your time in the public education realm?
At this point in time, I'm spending a lot of my time in the administrative realm and helping to plan future events and to coordinate those activities. We have an interesting structure. We have two boards. We have an advisory board for Fresno County Master Gardener Program that is designed to provide to advise the UC coordinator in the development and implementation of the program. And we work collaboratively together to do that. And then Fresno is unique among Master Gardener programs in the state of California in that we have a nonprofit organization as well, that is the Master Gardener Association of Fresno County. And that is the financial. That board deals with all the financial aspects of the program. Our major focus overall is to provide science-based gardening information to the Fresno County community. And we do that through a variety of different avenues. We have a Master Gardener helpline, which is an email system that is available through our webpage where folks can ask questions about gardening issues. And it might be, what's wrong with my plant? What kind of a bug is this? How do I get rid of this? Those kinds of things. And then we offer a series of community education classes that are, gosh, this spring we're doing them like almost every Saturday. And they are held at the Garden of the Sun, which is the demonstration garden that we operate, that is located on McKinley and Winery right next to the Discovery Center. And we also do classes at Fresno County Branch Libraries, the Fig Garden Library that is on Bullard and Marks, Woodward Park Library, the Betty Rodriguez Library, and then we do have some other locations in rural areas where we provide those classes.
Nice.
And because of a partnership that we have developed with the Fresno Metropolitan Flood Control District, we have received additional funding from them to be able to really expand our community outreach and community education efforts. And so we try to be at a lot of different events that are taking place in the community to share information about eco-friendly gardening, preventing pollutants from going into storm water runoff, proper use of fertilizations. This don't do too much of it because it ends up in our water system, and integrated pest management, which focuses on really using pesticides at the very as a very last resort, and letting nature take its course and encouraging good bugs to be in your garden. And if you do it right and you get the native plants that attract native bugs, that will counteract, mitigate impact of various invasive species. And then the garden has a natural balance and things work the way that they're supposed to.
It's fantastic. Let me jump in and ask you a couple education questions. What percentage of stuff that people find online in terms of gardening advice do you think is trustworthy? Just a ballpark, what do you
It's an
think?
interesting question. Like with anything, you've got to use some critical thinking skills to filter through stuff.
Yeah.
And if you find the same advice from a couple of different sources, that's a good indicator that it's correct. Percentage-wise, I don't know, maybe 70%.
Okay, that's pretty optimistic. I was assuming it would be lower than that because everyone's got their own advice of how to make the perfect garden or fix the soil. It'd be hard to know who to trust. And a lot
But
of people
it's
just
really, it's
Google.
about checking it out.
Yeah.
And what I do a lot of times is that if I have a question, of course, there's always the Master Gardener helpline.
Yeah.
Those people know what they're talking about.
Yeah, that's why I was asking that question, Linda, is that we're in this place where, this idea, do your own research, is promoted as an alternative to expert knowledge. But obviously, if you do your own research, you have to be able to assess whether that research is good or not. And if you don't have the background knowledge, it's
Just
unclear how
like
you
you do,
would arrive at that conclusion. So anyway, I'm very skeptical of just Google it as an answer, but
you
there's
know
good stuff
what?
out there too.
I Google a lot of stuff that has to do with plants and bugs and that kind of thing. But when I Google it, I always put in whatever it is that I'm asking.
Yeah.
And then I put in UCANR.
Okay.
And that will take you to the University of California website. So it's what are these little black bugs that keep getting in my white flowers?
Yeah.
And I know everybody sees them in the roses, but if you Google little black bugs in white flowers, UCANR, you will get the right answers. And those answers are going to emphasize integrated pest management.
Yeah. Let me ask you this is a hypothetical question, but I'm curious what you think about it. We see all forms of gardening and landscaping in Fresno. And there's some that is more conducive to sustainability and climate readiness, whatever term we want to use. Do you ever dissuade someone from pursuing a gardening path that's going to be super water intensive, not great for the environment, a bunch of non-native plants that wouldn't be great for a number of reasons? Or do you, as an educator, operate in a place of neutrality where a person arrives with their own goals and you're just going to help facilitate whatever that is, regardless of maybe your ethical qualms about the path they're choosing?
That's an interesting question. Ultimately, people are going to want to design gardens that make them happy,
Yeah.
that they find visually appealing, that they want to go out and spend time in. But doing that in a thoughtful manner is important. And being just giving people the knowledge of best practices is the best way to approach that. We also, I mentioned partnership with the Fresno Metropolitan Flood Control District. We also have a partnership with the City of Fresno Water Conservation Program. And they have a lot of resources that are available also for irrigation options. And they actually have equipment that is available, and they have consultants that are available to customers of Fresno Water Utilities. And they have a program also for lawn replacement. So just trying to connect folks with resources, other resources that are out there in the community, and providing them with the knowledge, and ultimately they're going to make their own decisions. And it's about a balance. I guess if you're thinking about the environment in general, the ideal garden for our climate is one that minimizes water usage, that integrates native plants, which are adapted to our area, which also encourages native pollinators and creating a balance. But you've got to have your fun spots too. That might be green, more green. And we also do a lot with vegetables and herbs and encouraging folks to develop home gardens. And our demonstration garden, the Garden of the Sun, is a great place to visit to get ideas about design and think about how you could integrate native plants into your landscape. We also have partnership with Clovis Botanical Gardens, which is also a lovely demonstration garden that does focus on a lot of native plantings.
I see. Let me ask you about something I've thought about a while now, not demonstration gardens, but community gardens. I often hear the kind of messaging about them is to address structural food insecurity and to connect people to agriculture. And a lot of those goals are very noble, and I agree with most of them. But then I also see in practice, it tends to be for the people that have the space and free time and their schedules to be able to go to the community garden, participate. And so sometimes the goals feel hyperbolic relative to what I see in practice. What's your view on community gardens and the role that they play in a community?
I think that one of the things that community gardens do is that they provide green spaces. They provide an opportunity for folks to get out into a semi-natural environment and to be able to develop a sense of community. So there are a lot of human issues that revolve around that, and perhaps larger social impacts. And it's a good place for people to learn about gardening as well. A lot of organizations or groups that are interested in developing community gardens, they often approach the Master Gardener program with questions about advice and how do we go about doing this and all of those sorts of things. And we have individuals, volunteers in our program and our UC coordinator that will work with those organizations to help them to provide some technical assistance to get things off the ground. We work with schools. One of the recent successes is just flourishing is the Newman Center garden. So there are a lot of pluses to that. But in terms of developing one, folks need to be very thoughtful about it and think about water, think about maintenance, think about security. Security can be an issue, but there are certainly a lot of benefits. And we do have some resources. We cannot provide volunteer work to go out and work in a community garden, but we can help to support community gardens by providing them with technical assistance.
Okay. We're going to jump into my favorite section of these podcasts, which is called Overrated versus Underrated. I'm just going to throw a bunch of things at you, Linda, and
This sounds like a test.
it's not a test. It's more of a rapid fire section just to get you to take a stand one way or another on something. And you're free to pass on any of these, of course, but it's more fun if we kind of do it a little rapid fire. All right. First one, front lawns. Overrated or underrated?
Overrated.
Okay, so you think we should pull most of them out? Is that kind of your where you come from on that? Or it just depends?
I think it just depends. I'm maybe we look, I have a front lawn, but I've cut into it a lot. It's still green. I like the green,
Yeah, me too.
but there's a lot less front lawn than there was when I moved here.
Got it. Next one. Composting at home, do you think that's over or underrated?
Underrated.
Okay, so more people should do it.
More people should do it.
I've had challenges. I don't know if it's just my own
It's
personal
challenging,
incompetence.
and you got to commit to doing it. Okay, I will confess that I have. We spent the money, we got the bin, the thing that you turn, and it's tough to, you really have to be dedicated and knowledgeable. So you're getting the right mix of greens and browns.
Gotcha.
And we do provide classes on composting.
Okay. Well, maybe I probably should take that class. Next
And
one.
it depends if it's best, I think, if you've got a big section of a garden that's off to the side that you're not really going to be seeing. That's where you can be doing it. You can do it on a large scale.
Okay.
But small composting also works because, hey, it's stuff that's going to go, a lot of it ends up in the landfill, unfortunately, that can be composted and used in your garden. It's
Okay.
good stuff.
Next one is not garden related. Me and Ed's Pizza, over underrated.
Oh no. Overrated.
Okay, you're not a fan?
Once in a while.
Once in a while. Okay. Yeah, that's generally my stance as well. Next one, heirloom vegetables.
Underrated.
Okay. So the hype is real. I should look for opportunities to buy more heirloom vegetables.
Yes.
Okay. You want to expand on that?
But
Why should I buy them? Because oftentimes in a grocery store, like, they're pricier, and so there's some uncertainty as to the value you're getting by buying heirloom vegetables.
they'll find them in the grocery store, grow them.
Okay. All right. Next one, seed saving.
It's a thing.
Okay. Do you think it's over or underrated? More should, in other words, I'm asking more, should more people be doing this?
I think it depends upon your circumstances and what you've got growing in your garden. There are a lot of seed exchanges that are taking place in our community, and that they focus on seed saving. I, for one, I'm not good at it.
Yeah.
But I do have one section of my garden that is a cottage garden, and there's a lot of ornamentals in there that self-sow. So I'm not capturing the seeds and saving them, but it regenerates itself.
All right. Next one I have for you is, and this is maybe a controversial one, and this is an
Me and
either.
Ed's was controversial.
I know. Get ready. This is an either or: gazebo gardens or evergreen nursery. And you could say you like them both, just maybe which one you prefer.
I like them both.
Okay.
And I go to both of them.
Do you go to them for different things?
It really depends. I love all the yard art at Evergreen.
Oh, yeah.
I'm much closer to gazebo. And they're different.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not going to recommend a nursery, but I will give a plug that both of those nurseries are the middle, probably the middle of this week, are going to be outlets for our spring garden tour tickets.
Oh, fantastic.
And we do a lot of outreach stuff at Gazebo Gardens, and we're going to be there with, I think, I'm not sure of the date, but we do Saturdays, Sundays at Gazebo, and we have a variety of mini workshops coming up.
Okay, for another either or.
Yeah, maybe this will be easier.
This one will be easier. Seeds or plant starters? Like the kinds you get at Home Depot where you get a little tiny tomato plant.
It depends on what it is, and
Is
it
there a certain
depends
thing that
upon.
you wouldn't buy a starter for?
You mean an already
Yeah, like
green
a
plant?
plant starter that you go and from a big box store or nursery. And I'll give you
Nursery.
my background. I've heard that plant starters, you can't trust the quality of it. It price point wise, it doesn't really make a lot of sense for how much they charge for a starter versus the yield on the plant. If we're just talking about vegetables, for example, I was just curious what your thought was on planting with seeds or starters.
It really depends upon what kind of a commitment you want to make to it. I buy tomatoes. I don't buy stuff. If you're talking about just the little itsy bitsy one, I buy tomato plants that look like they're hardy, and I put them in the ground. It's quicker results, and you've got to keep on a schedule if you're going to do the seeds. I am going to be putting sunflower seeds out. I buy plants,
Gotcha. All right.
but either one of the seeds really do get a good start if you're putting them in the ground. But you want to start them in smaller containers and be able to move them out later in the season. Wildflowers, seeds, a lot of summer flowers. This is coming up in the next month or so is a great time to throw seeds out for summer flowers.
All right, just a couple more in this horrible section I'm forcing you through. Pollinator gardens, are those over or underrated in your mind?
Underrated.
Okay, so we need more of those.
We
Why?
can't have too many pollinator gardens.
Yeah.
Pollinators are wonderful. We need pollinators. Pollinator gardens are beautiful. And you go out, look at a pollinator garden, and you've got bees and you've got butterflies and just all kinds of activity and hummingbirds. Be sure that a pollinator garden has something that has red blooms in it. And then you'll have the hummingbirds. They're beautiful. And it's like nature at work. That's what it's all about. And pollinator gardens attract all those beneficial insects that are going to help to create a balance in your garden. Yeah,
Okay.
definitely need more pollinator gardens.
Three more. This one, I've always wondered if the work is worth, or the yield is worth the work. Using rain barrels to collect water for your garden. Do you think that's over or underrated?
I think that there are pros and cons to it. We, as part of our partnership with the Master Gardeners partnership with the City of Fresno Water Conservation Program, we are going to be doing some projects with rain barrels and rain chains at the Garden of the Sun. And
Do you
try to.
personally use rain barrels?
What do you mean by personal use?
Like at your house, do you have rain barrels that collect water
I
that you
do
use
not
for your...
have rain barrel.
Okay. All
But
right.
it's something that we're exploring.
Okay.
And in the right place, they're beneficial and they're beautiful.
Yeah.
If you stage it correctly, it's a lovely addition to a garden.
Gotcha. All right, next one. Two more. Artificial turf, like AstroTurf.
Overrated.
Okay. You don't like it even though it reduces water usage?
It's pretty,
Okay.
but it still gets weeds in it.
Yeah.
And it inhibits rainwater from penetrating the ground and getting into the water table.
Yeah.
And it's hot.
Yeah, I've heard that there's a lot better ground cover options that do not require a lot of water that are good alternatives. I think people like
Yeah.
it for the easy button element of it.
Not a fan. And it doesn't feel the same when you walk on it barefoot.
Yeah, no, definitely doesn't. Okay, last
That was a good, that was an easy one.
one. Let's jump into some kind of a few general gardening questions I have before we talk about Fresno. Do you think that soil health is the most misunderstood concept in gardening?
I think that soil health is one of the most important aspects of gardening. And you didn't give me an over or
Oh, no, we jumped out of
underrated
that section. Now
voice
we're just
on
talking
this
about
one.
gardening. So, do you think people really understand and take the time to work on their soil health, or is that something that people need to spend a lot more time educating themselves and also working on?
I wish that people would spend a lot more time educating themselves on soil health and trying to see what they can do in their own garden to encourage that. And pesticides, overuse of fertilizer, trying to strive constantly for a super clean looking manicured garden does not give you good soil health.
I see.
Dynamic system soil is, and the interconnections between plants and soil is just amazing. And thinking about trees and soil and how, in a lot of ways, we're obsessed with getting rid of leaves from our garden and putting them into the green container and rolling it out to the curb. Let them fall. If you look at it, that's the way it's supposed to be. That
Yeah.
the leaves from the trees get their resources from the soil and the sun, and the trees are actually feeding the soil when their leaves fall and they're covering. I've got a huge pile of leaves out in the corner of my backyard, and I use them as mulch.
Yeah.
And if you got
I will confess to you, Linda, this is often a fight in my house because in our backyard we have quite a few large trees that distribute a lot of leaves. And my general philosophy was like, let the leaves around the tree decompose because that will enrich the soil, but it doesn't look pretty. And as they rot, it's trying to find that balance
it's
between.
a balance. It's the balance.
For
Yeah.
sure.
And you have to be careful, though, about what trees the leaves are laying around.
Oh, okay. Why is that?
How it affects the bark at the base of the tree. If it is, I have several Modesto ash trees that have been planted, I don't know, maybe 40 years ago here, 50 years ago. And you want to keep the leaves that fall, you don't want them building up around the base of the tree because it weakens the bark, and then the tree is susceptible to other things that might happen. If you've got redwood trees, all the droppings from the redwood, you want to let them stay. And so it's leave the leaves, but clear some areas so that your trees are getting air and can be healthy.
I see.
Yeah, I have a constant battle. I have finally persuaded my swayed my husband to accept the leaves on the ground. But it's still a battle with the gardener.
Yeah, I might need to take some notes on your tactics later. How often should I try to evaluate my soil quality, do soil tests and those kinds of things? Should that be a routine thing or a periodic thing?
I've never done it.
Oh, really? Okay, so you don't do the soil sample test and check if you have imbalances and stuff like that.
My understanding is that, first of all, I think a lot of times you can get a good sense of what's going on in your soil by what's going on with your plants.
Okay.
Soil testing, just testing that you can buy things commercially. And I don't know that they're that effective.
Yeah.
That the if you truly want to do soil testing, that the something to explore is there are labs in the community that do soil testing or evaluate the samples. And you need to test in multiple areas.
I see.
Do you do it? Have
I
you done
haven't
it?
done it in a while. I was having issues in the past with some shrubs that I was growing, and they were growing unevenly, and I wasn't sure, so I did a test. I don't know what actual, I added more alkaline to the soil. I don't. It's been a long time, but I haven't done it in a long time, and
Was
I
it
think
helpful?
maybe I'm not sure. It's one of those like causation versus correlation. Maybe it just needed time, or who even knows? But let me transition to something that you mentioned earlier that I really want you to maybe take a few minutes to unpack is. You mentioned over-fertilizing. Can you talk more about how if you're over fertilizing, because I sometimes you feel like your soil is just not performing, and so you just think, oh, I'll just add more fertilizer to enhance the growth of whatever plant. But what does it mean to over fertilize?
First of all, it means not following the directions.
Yeah, okay. Assuming we're following the directions, is there as opposed to just pouring out fertilizer?
Yeah, and not doing it any more often than it's advised. And I think that some plants need fertilizer more than other plants do. I hardly ever fertilize. I will fertilize roses
Yeah.
and citrus according to the guidelines. If you've got healthy soil and you have the right balance of plantings, it should minimize the use, your need to use fertilizers. Again, I'm not an expert in that area, but I've got the biggest issue with over-fertilizing is one, it changes the balance in your soil, and two, runoff
Yeah.
into the water system. But if a person did have a question about proper fertilizing, again, I would suggest they go to our helpline email or check out the UCANR website where there are very specific guidelines about fertilizing. I'm not a big fertilizer person, and I don't use pesticides in my yard either.
Yeah.
The only time I will use a pesticide, and it's a small little spray bug thing, is the black widows that get under my patio furniture.
Yeah, I think they're asking for it.
They're definitely asking for it. And I have got the past several years an explosion of lizards in my yard.
Interesting.
And I don't have the black widows like I used to.
Oh, they're eating them.
They're eating. Those little guys are doing their job.
Let me ask you about this. A long time ago, probably a decade ago, I did like a eco permaculture slash rewilding course at UCLA Extension. And I remember that there was a rewilding person there, someone that just believes that we need to turn back over land to rewild it. And one of the things that he said, and I'd love for your comment, is he said that we try to exercise too much control in our gardens. And he even advocated for something that's trendy called chaos gardening, where you just take a handful of seeds and you just throw them out. And then whatever nature chooses to grow, then that's what grows. What do you think about
Sounds
that
like
view of
fun.
flock? It sounds like fun.
Sounds
You think
like
that makes
fun.
so you agree with him?
If
Maybe
you,
a little too much control in our gardens?
I think, yes.
Okay.
I do. I think we do. That's just my personal opinion. We want to control it too much. But a little order is good. It's balance. It's always about balance. Throwing out a handful of seeds, you've got to be careful. You've got to look at the package. Like a lot of times you get like wildflower mixes.
Yeah.
Check the packaging because you want to make sure that they're native seeds. There can be something in there that is not a native that could become invasive that can throw the balance of your garden off.
Yeah.
But that sounds like fun chaos. Sometimes my yard looks like chaos.
Yeah, sometimes
A gardener thinks my yard looks like chaos.
I'm sure he just wants straight lines and lawn.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. I've recently thought about, I've got a bunch of drip systems around my house for all the plant life we have,
Good for you.
which is so important because I can't always remember to water everything according to a schedule. And so we've devised a schedule for it and have things under a system. But then I also wonder if what there's a downside to those kind of systems in that you're engaging with the garden less because you have things automated. And then, like when I spot water things or hand water things, I'm engaging with the plant in such a way where it's almost like a checkup, like at a doctor, where you're watering it and you're kind of like, how are you doing? You touch the leaves, you have a moment with your patient. Do you think that one of the downsides of all these automated systems is that we're less connected to our plant life in that intimate way?
Perhaps. I'm not. I always go. That's like coffee in the morning, looking at the garden.
Yeah.
We need to definitely, you raised a really great point there that it's really important to monitor your garden. That's like the first step in an integrated pest management system is to monitor and see how everybody's doing. And are there creepy crawly things on there? And what are those creepy crawly things? Or pick up the random weed when you walk by it. But I mean, drip systems are great. I have the personal mistake that I've made that I think that some other people have made too, is that you need to make sure that you've got dedicated lines for a drip system, that you don't want to have a drip system coming off of the same line that you have a sprinkler system on, because you need a lot more time for a drip system than you do for a sprinkler system.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, Linda. This is something I've thought about as well, reflectively. A couple months ago, I did a podcast with a arborist that wrote a book about the history of California oaks, the trees. And one of the things he was talking about in that podcast was how a lot of the valley oaks that we're used to seeing are dying off because the climate is changing. And so they've recently, up and down California, have been importing Mexican species of oak that is better acclimated to slightly warmer climates and it's performing well. And that kind of raised a thought in my mind about these discussions around native plants. So if you have an environment that's constantly changing, native in that situation becomes confusing because native to what? Because there's no time immemorial where that was, it almost feels like Garden of Eden kind of conversations where you're picturing this romantic past that in reality was never really there because things have always been changing. So, do you think native plants, it makes sense given what we're seeing in terms of climate change and more frequent droughts, stuff like that?
Yeah, I think that native plants make sense. I think that that was interesting. So they're bringing in oaks from that are native to Mexico.
Yeah, because they're better adapted to higher heat tolerance. And the valley oaks, a lot of them are going through dry rot and
You
because.
always need to be thoughtful about introducing non-natives, because there's other baggage that comes with that.
Right.
Perhaps they're better adapted to the climate, but are they also attractive to parasites
Ah, that's a good point.
that are not currently in our ecosystem here?
Yeah.
So that's a very thoughtful process.
Okay. Let's talk a couple questions about Fresno before we wrap up. This is again another spicy question for you. What's a gardening trend in Fresno that you like, and then one that you don't like?
Gardening trend.
So, what's something that you see a lot in Fresno in terms of what people do with their gardens that you like, and then something that you don't?
The kind of sterile, don't like sterile, clean, manicured front yards.
Yeah.
Integration, and mostly it's about front yards because that's what
Yeah.
I like it when I see a garden that has an integration of native plants and some really lush green ornamentals. And one of it's becoming a trend in my neighborhood that I'm not crazy about is that people don't water their front yard. They don't water their yards. And they I guess they think they're saving money by not using the water, but it's not a good look.
No, I think that it's often confusing for people because we have a lot of sustainability targets and programs. And so then they take that knowledge to the extreme of, oh, I should just whatever, like watering plants is watering a lawn is not good for the environment. Therefore, I just let it die. Or and maybe they don't have the money to put in a quote unquote drought tolerant landscape or whatever. And so the solution is just to kind of leave it, which I get where they're coming from, but I think that's not really the point. But in any case, so I ask every guest how their unique knowledge set and their experience shapes the way that you see a city. As an example, I have worked in education for almost my whole career. And so when I look at the city of Fresno and I look at the problems and solutions, I often come at it through that kind of education lens of seeing a lot of problems as education problems and a lot of solutions as education solutions. I think we all inherently do this. How has becoming a master gardener and working in this space, how has that affected the way Fresno?
My background's in education, just like yours. But master gardener, I think that there's a real, for Fresno, there's certainly a need for more green space. We need and trees. There are some sections of the city that on city property and city easements that need more care, more green spaces, and when they're put in, then take care of them. I just in my neighborhood, there's some instances where there's been replanting, but then not necessarily maintenance of the irrigation systems. Trees and appropriate plantings of trees. Ones that are going to thrive in our environment and with minimal care.
No, I love that because, and this is something I talk about all the time, how in a city like Fresno, everything's interconnected. I remember I'm on the board of the Fresno Philharmonic, and it's a special institution for me in Fresno. And I remember I was having a conversation with someone who made some broad generalizations about the Philharmonic and who attends and stuff like that. And what I tried to connect them to is that in a city, like an ecosystem, everything serves a role. Something like the Philharmonic is an arts and culture institution that might attract people to move to Fresno. For example, we have a physician shortage in the city of Fresno, and that's ever increasing. If you're a physician and looking to move to a city, you want to move to a city where there's arts and culture and things that are important to you, and that might be something like the Philharmonic. And so when I'm thinking about your space and green spaces and all those kinds of things, like having a landscape and a city that takes care of itself in terms of its plant life, that has a tremendous impact on people's sense of value of the city where they live. I think if you see not taking care of landscapes, you make assumptions that affect the way you take care of your landscape. And so for me, I see all of these things as interconnected. And we often try to prioritize one lens for looking at a city. And that's just part of our own myopia. But at the end of the day, I think all of these things are critical to a thriving city. So to conclude, Linda, I want to ask two kind of final questions. I'll let you answer them in the order you'd like. First, I'd love a few book recommendations. And then second, I'd love to hear about some of your upcoming programs and the things on your event calendar that you'd like to share.
Okay. I think one of my favorite books of all time was The Blind Assassin
I've not heard of that.
by Margaret Atwood.
Yes, okay.
I love that book. You told me you were going to ask me about books.
Is there any gardening books that are important to you that you'd recommend to people?
Sunset Western Garden book. That's a classic.
I have that book. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, it is. I'm currently reading a book by, oh my gosh, it's called The Antidote. And it is kind of the blind assassin. It's a mixture of magic and reality, and trying to sort through it and find out what's the reality in the book and what are the fictional magical aspects of it.
Sounds amazing.
Yeah, it was published last year, the
Awesome.
2025 book. Found it, got it off the New York Times book recommendation list.
Wonderful. So to conclude, Linda, what can we expect from Fresno Master Gardeners? What are some events on the horizon?
All right. The list. We're going to be at the Home and Garden Show on March 6th, 7th, and 8th. We have our annual plant sale coming up on March 19th, 20th, and 21st. Have you been?
Yes, I don't think it was last year, though.
Yeah. And it's in the same location. It's on the corner of Pico and Maroa.
Okay.
And there's going to be a huge selection of ornamentals,
Wonderful.
vegetables, and herbs. And one of the things that we're making available through the plant sale that I haven't really seen in nurseries, I mean, they may be out there, but I haven't seen them, is we have grafted tomatoes, which are my personal experience has been that they're amazing. They're grafted on a hardy rootstock. Don't ask me what variety it is,
Okay.
but they're very vigorous and appear to be my personal experience, pest resistant. And there's a variety of popular tomatoes that are grafted that will be available at the plant sale.
That sounds very intriguing. I'm
Yeah, you get, and
interested.
it's not too far from you. So you have got to go check that out.
Absolutely.
If, but I may get there before you and buy them all.
Don't do it, Linda.
I don't know. Education Day at the Garden of the Sun is going to be on March 28th. This is going to, March and April are really busy months for us.
Yeah.
It'll be on March 28th at the Garden of the Sun on Winery and McKinley. And there's going to be, we'll be selling some plants there as well. And then there's going to be a variety of little mini workshops and exhibitors, folks from the community sharing information about various programs that are related to gardening and the environment, and then opportunities to tour the demonstration garden. The spring garden tour is on April 25th. It's the same day as Porch Fest,
Ooh.
but we're a little bit north. Most of the homes are going to be a little bit north of Porch Fest. And so people can do both things.
Yeah, well, go see some gardens and then go listen to some music after.
That's right. And so it's a full day event. It is from 9 to 4 on the 25th, rain or shine. Last year it rained a little bit, but it was just fine.
Okay.
There are five private gardens and the Garden of the Sun. And this year, one of the gardens is on Huntington Boulevard, and the other four private gardens are very close to each other in the old big area.
Gotcha. Well, that sounds like
And
a lot of fun.
it is. And the tickets are $30 in advance and $35 the day of the tour.
Okay.
And tickets can be purchased. There's a link on our website if you wanted to order tickets. And you can do that there, and then they will be sent to you. But tickets are also available at various outlets in the community. And I'm not going to remember the whole list, but I know that Fresno Ag has them, Sierra Nut House in Clovis, Belmont Nursery, Gazebo Gardens, Evergreen, and I believe Willow Gardens.
Fantastic.
But There is, like I said, there's a complete list of those gardens. And those are our major events that are coming up. We on March 15th, we're going to have, we'll be at Gazebo Garden, and we're going to have a series from, we're going to be at Gazebo Gardens from 10:30 to noon, and we're going to have a series of mini workshops available that day. One of them is going to be information about becoming a master gardener,
Okay.
salvia, so you can learn all about different types of salvias, summer veggies, and the secrets of canning. The Master
Ooh.
Gardener program works very closely with another University of California program called Master Food Preservers.
Okay.
And actually, there's several master gardeners who are also master food preservers. So the canning aspect is going to be in collaboration with the Master Food Preservers program.
I think I might need to do a part two with a master preserver because I have a lot
Oh,
of
I
questions
think you should.
about
I
that.
think that would be great. Oh, and it's also food truck day at Gazebo on that Sunday.
Fantastic. Linda, if people want to go online and see kind of events, like where is it to go to your website? Is there social media accounts that they should go to?
We're on Instagram and Facebook, Fresno Master Gardeners.
Okay.
And then our website has a plethora of information, and there's a whole list here of community classes that we have coming up on Saturdays at the Garden of the Sun or in the regional libraries. And it's a UCANR.ECU
Okay. Yeah,
website.
we'll
But
include the links and stuff in the show notes for people listening.
if people just Google Fresno Master Gardeners, the website will come up. And the first thing you're going to see there is a link to the helpline.
Gotcha. Well,
And then a series of activities that are coming up.
yeah, this is amazing, Linda. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with me today. There's so much resources, and hopefully people's conclusion after listening to this is just get out into your garden and plant some stuff. It really is life and life-giving and soul healing and all those kind of things of just being
No,
out
it
in nature.
is. It's good for you physically because it gets people up and moving and out,
Yeah.
and emotionally.
Absolutely.
And it's
Absolutely.
a great hobby.
Yeah. Yep.
It really is. It can be very joyful, and it's just fun watching things grow.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. On that note, Linda, thanks so much for talking with me today.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, you can support this podcast by leaving us a rating and review or by making a financial contribution at our Patreon page, which is www.patreon.com/Fresno's Best. We'll see you next time.